am white power. Any white man that stands up is white power. I'm a white nationalist. The government has not now nor ever will crush white nationalism.
It's easy to spot a stormtrooper walking down the street in uniform and say, ah, well, that's a Nazi. I can recognize him. It's much harder to picture the people who seem very much like ourselves.
I think many things that Hitler did were great. And many of those things were adopted by Franklin D. Roosevelt. I think the idea of the Waffen-SS, that was a good idea. This is for life and death.
Declaration of War, November 25th, 1984. It is a dark and dismal time in the history of our race. An evil shadow has fallen across our once fair land. A certain vile, alien people have taken control of our country. When the day comes, we will not ask whether you swung to the right or whether you swung to the left. We will simply swing you by the neck. This is war.
The right-wing sect which declared war on the United States government in 1984 had many names. The Brüder Schweigen, German for Solid Brotherhood, the White American Bastion, and the Order. Former members revealed that a special order assassination squad plotted to kill the heads of three commercial television networks, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and television producer Norman Lear, among others. The unquestioned leader of the order was Bob Matthews, a well-liked lumberjack from upstate Washington. After more than a year of tracking Matthews, FBI agents surrounded him in an island hideout near Seattle. During the shootout on December 6, 1984, the house caught fire. When it was over, Matthews was dead. After the fire, FBI agents launched a nationwide manhunt for Matthews' followers.
In spite of Matthews' death and the arrests of his supporters, agitation persists for a militant, separate, Aryan nation. Order members say that the war has just begun.
Bob is really one hell of a man. And imagine a man that would die for his beliefs. There's very few men like that today.
Bruce Carroll Pierce was the FBI's most wanted man until his arrest. He was also the order's second in command.
Just because Bob died or we've had some deaths in the past or had some setbacks, I don't believe by any means that the movement is over or that our goals will not be accomplished.
The order was a secret army striking out at a federal government that was vulnerable to armed attack.
Government's weak. Government is pathetically weak. This government is so weak right now that if 5,000 men of any race, of any consequence, any type of philosophical fundamentalism stood up, told the federal government that we have 5,000 men who would die right now, for what we believe in, government can do nothing about it.
People are surprised at what's going on, and I think it's a situation you have to report. Guys like Matthews and others declared war on what they called the ZOG, the Zionist Occupational Government. When that happened, you saw the Fed begin to scramble.
It was the robbery of a Brinks truck in Ukiah, California in July 1984 when the order made off with $3.6 million that drew the FBI's full attention. At the same time, Secret Service agents caught several members trying to pass counterfeit bills. After his arrest, a friend became a government informant.
I believe that those men are prisoners of war, and I would support them as prisoners of war.
Tom Metzger is one of the most popular leaders on the ultra-right. While media attention was fixed on the trial of order members in Seattle, from his home and headquarters in Fallbrook, California, an hour's drive from San Diego, Metzger continued to recruit for his organization, War.
This is a time of rapid communication. And we must be on the cutting edge of technology like anyone else. We like it because it reaches into maybe every home in the United States where there's a computer. Every young person that is into computers, and there are millions across the United States, and they tend to be sharp kids with these computers in their bedroom, and they can log on and get all this information.
To attract others to his program, Metzger also set up 24-hour telephone hotlines in eight cities, including Los Angeles, Sacramento, and San Francisco.
are the Jews and their supporters so afraid of free speech that they try to terrorize their critics into silence?
Metzger also has a television talk show aired on Community Access Cable Television.
Reason, that show dedicated to free speech.
When FBI agents moved in on the order, members were within a few weeks of cracking Brink Central Vault here in San Francisco. With more than $30 million, they could have bought and outfitted an army.
I need my own state. I need my own nation. I need to have my own schools for my daughter, for my son, for my family.
When Nero tried to persecute the Christians in the Roman times, it did not eradicate them. And I do not believe it will eradicate us.
Just a few will be enough to reignite the spark for us to rise again. It's not over by any means. It's just a start.
We enjoin all people to choose intelligently which side they will be on. Make sure that you have the greatest number of relevant facts possible. There will surely come a day when fence sitting will be impossible. And once you have made up your mind and begin to act, the die is cast for you. There will be no turning back. With these things said, let the battle begin.
Yes, it's just as important today as it was in 1984. That declaration of war has never been rescinded. Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana on the August the 11th, 2016, and it is Thor's Day. Yeah, I like the sound of that, Thor's Day. Incidentally, that shootout on Whidbey Island, they said a house caught fire, Bob and Bob Matthews burnt to death. That's no accident. The feds do that all the time. They've done it to several of our people, and they've done it to, like, the Waco people and so forth. They deliberately set the fire instead of waiting people out, which they could do. They deliberately set fires that burn people to death. And so if you think they just do it to white separatists, no, they do it to black separatists. They do it with religious people or anybody that gives them too much trouble. They don't want to wait them out. They just want to burn them out. That's your wonderful, loving sons of bitches in Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon. And they're talking about Trump, talking about the Second Amendment. Well, hell yes, the Second Amendment was meant for the people to defend themselves. And they can collectively create a militia and stand against the government. And when they make fun of that, they're whistling past the graveyard, because it happens not only in this country, it's happened all over the world. There's civil war and upheaval all over the world. And why do they think in Washington it will not come here, whether it's somebody from outside the country or people from inside the country? They're whistling past the graveyard, boys and girls, and they know it. What's funny is the media and all these people that are talking about how horrible this violence is and people talking about shooting people. Where do they learn this shit? They learn it from the federal government. The federal government trains millions of people to kill people in the most brutal fashion. I mean, I went through it when I trained in the Army. We weren't playing with pop guns and BB guns. We were taught with live ammunition how to kill people, how to kill as many as possible. So when the government and the media say, oh, you regular people, regular working people, you're terrible for talking violence. Well, what Trump said was correct. That if anybody, whether it be Hillary or whoever it be, want to wipe out the Second Amendment, which is the last ditch stand by people to protect themselves, if they do that, all bets are off. And what's so hard to understand about that? You know, I've told you several times, many times, that the way the blacks got a certain percentage of their race up the ladder in this country was not from Martin Luther King marching. No, no, no. It wasn't from petitioning the government. No, no, no. It was none of that bullshit. It was the Malcolm X's and the black separatists burning down Watts, burning down Detroit, burning down Newark, burning down Washington, D.C. That's what got them. That's what got you the top band in the army being black and things like that, eventually leading to a black president. Because it's fear. They put the fear into the white ruling class, the establishment. And that's the only thing that ever causes them to change, is you put the fear in them. Some people want to put the fear into them individually. Well, I'm more for taking their toys away. In fact, that's what the black militants did back in the 80s. They took their toys away. They burnt down their cities, burned down their department stores, and so forth. I know. I was around at the time. I watched the tactics. The tactics were perfect for guerrilla warfare. And I've told the blacks before, again, I say, you know, I'm a black white separatist, but I'll give you a clue. You're never going to get any place by marching around and whining to this government. You're never going to get it that way, I'll tell you. Anyhow, of course, the right wing gave me a lot of shit for years because I met with black separatists all over the country, including Louis Farrakhan. I didn't meet with him personally, but I was invited to his gathering in Los Angeles where there were 20,000 blacks and 10 whites, my guys. And I went around the country having talks with these people. And for the most part, we agreed on a whole hell of a lot of stuff. And the right wing didn't like that. Metzger's a traitor. He's dealing with separatists. Well, isn't that what we want? Is separatism? If you don't want separatism, what the hell are you fighting for? What are you talking about? That's all it is. It's separatism is the only way out. And if a black group wants to talk to me about it, I'm ready to listen. Yep, that's the way it goes. The enemy of my enemy is my friend for a while anyhow. I tell you all the time, you can't trust anybody. You can't trust anybody. David Friedman, an advisor to Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, visited Jerusalem and met with senior officials from the prime minister's office. According to a report from Haaretz, a senior government official told the newspaper that Friedman had sought the meeting and that to maintain balance, an advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had traveled to the United States for meetings with advisors to Democrat candidate Hillary Clinton. Friedman, a Jewish lawyer who has represented the Republican candidate in bankruptcy matters, also reportedly met with members of the Israeli branch of Republicans overseas, during which he was given an overview of the group's plan to get Americans living in Israel to vote for Trump in November. The senior official said that Friedman's meeting with Netanyahu advisors concerned diplomatic and security matters, and that he was present with Israel's positions on various issues. Well, what do you think about that, boys and girls? Well, what do you think about the murder of this Democratic National Committeeman, Seth Rich? I guess it happened in Washington, D.C., yeah. Reminds us of another guy that got killed a few years ago, probably by the Clintons. WikiLeaks has announced that it will give $20,000 for information on the killer of Seth Rich, the DNC staffer who was killed in Washington, D.C. on July 10th. guerrilla journalism organization known for mostly recently leaking several thousand emails from the Democratic National Committee posted its reward offer on Twitter on August the 9th. Now, this guy was killed. His billfold was not taken. His watch was not taken. Nothing was taken off the body. He was just shot in the back. Interesting. As usual, it is investigated by the Capitol Police, the same ones that poo-pooed the killing of the other guy a few years ago. Yeah, they're calling Rich's death an attempted robbery. But since he died, conspiracy theories implicate the Democratic Party leadership in his shooting have circulated online. According to these theories, Rich, like WikiLeaks, knew information that Hillary Clinton and other Democratic leaders did not want to be made public. Now, they're saying it attempted robbery. Well, whoever killed him had plenty of time to take his billfold and all his credit cards and everything, but they were found intact on the body. So who's shitting who? Well, I see that Monday, 9 were killed in Chicago, probably by the black KKK, 13 wounded on Monday. On Tuesday, 3 murdered, 15 wounded in Chicago shootings on Tuesday. So there you go. Got to keep you up to date on the black KKK. 9 people were killed and 13 others, including a 10-year-old boy, were wounded in shootings across Chicago on Monday, with 7 of the fatal shootings occurring in a span of less than 14 hours. The latest fatal shooting happened late Monday night when one man was killed and 2 others were critically wounded in the Roseland neighborhood on the far south side. The 3 were standing on the sidewalk at 11:17 p.m. in the 9400 block of South LaSalle when a blue car drove past and someone inside opened fire in their direction. According to Chicago police, Anthony Hatchett, 42, was shot in the head and was taken to Christ Medical Center in Oak Lawn, where he was pronounced dead at 12:11 a.m. Tuesday, according to police and the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office. He lived at the 10600 block of South Parnell. A 28-year-old man was shot in the back, was also taken to Christ Medical Center, police said. The third man, 30, was taken to Stroger Hospital with gunshots to the right arm and left leg. Both were listed in critical condition. About an hour before that, a man was shot to death in the West Englewood neighborhood on the south side. Eric L. Williams, 27, was standing on a front porch at 10:18 p.m. in the 1800 block of West 58 when someone in a gray sedan fired shots at him, authorities said. Williams of the 1200 block on West 71st Place suffered multiple gunshot wounds to the side of his torso and was taken to Stoger Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 11 p.m. That's what I call birth control the hard way. At 9:24 p.m., a man was shot to death in the Holman Square neighborhood on the west side. John Hosey Jr., 28, was driving in the 3500 block of West Crenshaw when he heard gunfire and felt pain, authorities said. Hosey suffered gunshot wounds of the left arm, torso, and back, and was taken to Mount Sinai Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 10:32 p.m., according to police and the medical examiner's office. He lived at 3900 block on West Fillmore. Less than an hour earlier, a man was killed and a teenage boy wounded in the West Garfield Park neighborhood shooting. The 28-year-old man was standing on the sidewalk in the 100 block of South Kilpatrick about 8:45 p.m. when a male walked up and started shooting at him, police said. The man was shot multiple times and was taken to Mount Sinai Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. His name had not been released as of Tuesday afternoon. A 17-year-old boy who was driving past the scene when the shooting started was also struck in the left ankle. He drove himself to the Loreto Hospital, where his condition was stabilized. Earlier Monday evening, a 24-year-old man was shot to death in the Ashburn neighborhood on the southwest side. Denzel Mickle was shot in the right arm and the left side of his neck and his head about 7:30 p.m. In the 3200 block of West 83rd Street, authorities said Mickle, of the 7,000 block of South Honor, was taken to Christ Medical Center in Oak Lawn, where he was pronounced dead at 8:20 p.m. Another man was shot and killed less than 10 minutes earlier in a separate West Garfield Park attack. The 22-year-old was in an 800 block of South Springfield at 7:22 p.m. when someone in a gray vehicle shot him in the back and the right arm. Police said he was taken to Stroger Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. A 61-year-old man was shot to death Monday afternoon in the south side of Chatham neighborhood at 1:18 p.m. Michael Lewis was on the front porch in the 9100 block of South Cottage Grove when someone fired shots in his direction. Police and the medical examiner office said Lucas, who lived in the same block as the shooting, was pronounced dead at the scene at 1:35 p.m. Police said he was not the intended target of the shooting. Well, that's some consequence. Two other people were killed in shootings early Monday morning. William Villa, 25, was killed while driving in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. He was a black SUV in 1100 block of Northwestern Avenue at 2:27 a.m. when he stopped at a red light at Western and Division, according to police at the medical examiner's office. A dark car pulled alongside his vehicle and someone inside opened fire. The SUV then pulled forward and crashed into a traffic light in the northeast corner of the intersection. Villa was shot in the head, but three female passengers in the SUV were not injured. He was taken to Stroger Hospital, where he died about a half an hour later, according to the medical examiner's office. The day's first shooting was a man shot to death in East Garfield Park neighborhood. Officers responded at 2:25 a.m. to a call of a person shot in the 3200 block of West Walnut. They found 43-year-old Lee Martin lying on the sidewalk with bullet wounds in the head and the back. Among the non-fatal shootings, a 10-year-old boy was critically wounded Monday night while he was on his family's front porch in West Garfield. Well, Monday's shootings followed a weekend that left 8 people dead and 39 wounded across the city. Boy, that black KKK, boy, you don't want to screw with them. They're, I'm telling you, the white KKK can retire. They don't need to do anything anymore. Yeah, you can just take life easy because the black KKK is doing all your work. That almost wore me out, giving you all that news about that activity in Chicago. Now, just couple that with all the black KKK shootings across the country on these evenings at the same time. Somebody better start keeping track. Check on how many people killed on, say, Monday night in New York City or Philadelphia or Baltimore or San Francisco. Let's start keeping track. I want to know about these things. I want to know how well trained the black KKK has been and how good they are and how straight they shoot. Also, don't forget what Ronald McDonald said about this Second Amendment. It's covered by Brandenburg versus Ohio. I mean, you can say something like that anytime you want, But according to Brandenburg versus Ohio in federal court years ago, unless you're prepared to carry it out or have the means of carrying it out, it doesn't mean anything. So Ronald, he's covered very well on that subject. So if you want to say something like that, and if you've got no plan to carry it out, you got no method to carry it out, well, you can say whatever you want. You can say, I hope that gal slips on a banana peel and breaks her ass. And you're all right. It's just this way. Right to keep and bear arms is simply the situation that you have, that if the government becomes oppressive and a dictatorship, you have the obligation, really, and the natural right to resist and change the government. So if they don't like it, they can kiss your ass. Well, here's a little article from Heat Street, whatever that is. He says there's nothing wrong with talking about black-on-black crime. Many hear Black Lives Matter as implying that black lives matter more than other people's and respond with that all lives matter, a special response or a common response, and a correct one has been that Black Lives Matter means not Black Lives Matter more, but Black Lives Matter too. However, another issue related to Black Lives Matter is being misunderstood in a similar way, this time by advocates of Black Lives Matter rather than its opponents. It's time to clear up this second misunderstanding. Namely, it has become highly incorrect among supporters of Black Lives Matter to refer to black-on-black crime. Over the past several months, a meme has been settling in among left-of-center people that to even use the term black-on-black crime is as unenlightened as saying that someone is a credit to your race, or saying you people to a black crowd. The idea is that since most whites are killed by one another, there's no reason to think it's extraordinary that most black people are killed by other black people. Murder, like so much else, is all about who you know and who's nearby after all. That is true, but this truth is a different business than what people are referring to when criticizing Black Lives Matter. Some have argued that exactly because black people are in much more danger of being killed by other black people than by cops, witness the epidemic of homicides within the inner city communities every summer as is currently happening in Chicago and elsewhere. Black Lives Matter is wrong to focus only on an occasional cop killing of a black person. To respond to someone making this point with white people are most likely to kill each other too is a non sequitur. Oh, it's like a town being advised to put fluoride in its drinking water and taking offense at the advice by objecting that the town next door hasn't been putting fluoride in their water either, while people in both towns' teeth are rotting out. Yet a simplistic idea is settling in that is simply undeniably wrong to ever utter the sequence of words black-on-black crime, regardless of the point one is trying to make. This is sloppy thinking. What's wrong is to refer to black-on-black crime as evidence of something uniquely pathological about black people. Well, it is. The percentage of murders among them is much higher than among whites percentage per capita. There is nothing wrong with saying that something's normal about black people. A tendency for murder to happen more within the group than outside suggests that Black Lives Matter is attending to but a sliver of what most threatens the lives of people it's concerned for. That is a reference to the Black Lives Matter issue. The term black on black crime refers simply to black on black crime in contrast to white on black crime. As in cops killing black people. To instead classify the term black on black crime as a slur, period. And this is what is happening of late. It's illogical. Moreover, it detracts attention from the genuine concern for black communities, including plenty of black ones who suggest Black Lives Matter extend their focus to what happens within black communities. I hope you're following this, boys and girls. It's getting a little... And finally, treating black-on-black crime as a new bad word, like nigger, will only create fakery. And the way we discuss race in the country already has had enough of that. Enlightened people's impulse to avoid causing offense to black people. Heavens to murgatroyd, we wouldn't want to do that. And to make sure you always offend white people. And to always demonstrate that they are not racist will force a certain attendance to the pox on saying black on black crime. It will become a cocktail party cliche to dutifully observe, quote, but white people are more likely to be killed by whites, unquote, and shrug with the implication that anyone who doesn't understand that is one of them, unenlightened, and likely willfully so, impending by their inner racists from giving black people a fair shot. I think that's a poor choice of words, giving black people a fair shot. They get fair shots all the time up in Chicago. It's lucky that they're such bad marksmen. Blacks are terrible marksmen. Because they try to hold their gun in that nigger way, sideways. So they don't have any sights on their gun. So probably, instead of being 5 or 10 murdered on a weekend, there'd be 50 if they could shoot straight. But under the radar, plenty of people will always know that this taboo doesn't really make sense. And that it even seems to pull attention away from what real black people living real lives think of as their real problems. We should, to the extent we can, use language with clarity and honesty. Pretending it's always wrong to refer to something called black-on-black crime is antithetical to that mission. And we need to nip the burgeoning of this new and useless taboo in the bud with all deliberate speed. There you go. Black on black crime is a genuine thing. Don't deny it, Sambo. Uh-oh, here's a story that'll wind your clock. The sentencing of two Brooklyn Hasidic Jew men who admitted to participating in the vicious beating of a gay, homosexual black man was put on hold Tuesday after they chose a community service organization that services Jewish children, not a cultural diverse community as recommended. Pinchas Braver and Abraham Winkler pleaded guilty in May to unlawful imprisonment in connection with where Taj Patterson was beaten on a Williamsburg street in December 2013. As a condition for the plea bargain, the prosecutor recommended that their 150 hours of community service be served in a culturally diverse neighborhood outside where this unlawful imprisonment took place. Patterson, 25, suffered serious injuries that left him blind in the right eye. And they're only giving him 150 days? Of community service. How about that? Guess it pays to be a Jew. Braver, 22, and Winkler, 42, will also receive 3 years probation and pay $1,400 restitution. Their attorneys advised Brooklyn Supreme Court Justice Danny Chun during a sidebar conference on Tuesday that their clients want to participate with Chai Lifeline for their community service. In other words, a Jew outfit. According to the organization's website, they offer a number of services for Jewish children with life-threatening illness. The people have concerns with the organization under the plea, and community service was to be in a culturally diverse atmosphere, unquote. The judge said after the parties took a brief break, quickly researching the organization. So anyhow, there you go. You got two Jews that pretty well got away with knocking an eyeball out of a black guy with just basically community service. Well, they're chosen people by God, man. You can't go against that. Well, it looks like there were several people involved here. The sentence was delayed for another week for prosecutors to further investigate Chai Lifeline. Prior to the pair taking a plea, prosecutors dismissed charges against Aaron Hollander and Joseph Fried when the sole witness recanted. Meanwhile, the last of the five alleged assailants, Mayor Herskovic, will go forward with trial on August 23rd. If convicted, Herskovic faces up to 25 years in prison for gang assault. Oh, they're going to hang that kike out to dry. Well, what the hell is this? White-on-black violence is everywhere, says Associated Press. There are millions of stories in the big city with a million ways to tell each one. So when the University of Chicago told reporters that a new poll shows 62% of young black people are more afraid of violence from Tom Metzger than from ISIS, the world's largest news organization had a choice. One, it could produce a story scorning such a transparently false idea. Maybe even remind their readers that white people are 25 to 50 times more likely to be a victim of black violence than vice versa. Though many already know that from personal experience. Ouch! Or it could perpetuate the greatest hoax of our generation, the myth of black victimization, that black people are relentless victims of relentless white racism all the time, everywhere. That explains everything. Especially why cops are always picking on black people for no reason whatsoever. Don't laugh, it's called critical race theory. Only today, it is an industry taught to hundreds of thousands of students in hundreds of school districts across the country, including virtually every university. The Associated Press chose door number two. Quote, poll. Young blacks fear white extremist violence more than violence from foreign extremists, unquote, said the headlines in the papers around the country, including Afro.com. 62% of young African Americans and 55% of Hispanics surveyed said they were very concerned about the threat of violence committed by Tom Metzger, compared with one-third of whites and 41% of Asian Americans. Gen Forward is a survey by Black Youth Project at the University of Chicago with the Associated Press, NORC, Center for Public Affairs Research. Boy, that's a long one. The poll is designed to pay special attention to the voices of young adults of color, highlighting how race and ethnicity shape the opinions of a new generation. I guess they're not interviewing how whites feel about this. Greg Higgins, 27, was one of the whites who said he was very worried about violence from extremists of his own race, especially Tom Metzger. In fact, he said he was more concerned about the homegrown white extremists than the threat of violence from people outside the United States or people inspired by foreign extremists. A social worker in Pittsburgh, Higgins, said that growing political tension during the current election cycle has shown a really ugly part of our past coming through and being more heard. He described it as white males who are angry and who aren't now afraid to show that anger. They're pissed off. That fear of loss of control and loss of privilege is what's inspiring this vitriol and this hate, Higgins said. Well, why didn't you say loss of job? You notice how they put that in, loss of privilege. In other words, you're getting something you don't work for. Very clever. As you can see, critical race theorists are easy to find. AP loves to interview them and hire them. Here's a story from 2012. AP poll, U.S. majority have prejudice against blacks. Well, I hope so. AP never really tells us how they know if someone is racist, other than when measured by an implicit racial attitudes test, the number of Americans with anti-black sentiments jumped to 56%, up from 49%. Well, that's good. The test. No one takes a test and says they hate a person because of their race. So the shrinks found another way to uncover our darkest secrets, which we covered at length in this scintillating bestseller, Don't Make Black Kids Cry, or Don't Make Black Kids Angry. Some tests are short as 6 questions. If you do not like affirmative action, racial quotas, black criminality that is widely out of proportion, and things like that, then guess what? You just failed. You just failed, you dumb white guy. Despite the AP's explanation of rampant white racism that is everywhere and explains everything all the time, it is very difficult to find it. That is why Hillary and Barack have taken to talking about unconscious and subconscious racism, which Hillary, of course, wards off with some special hot sauce in her purse and some black friends to help her with her black musical choices. The National Association of Black Journalists loves that. But one thing the AP in this poll ignore is the level of black-on-white criminality that is wildly out of proportion. You do not have to take a silly test to find out. Could it be that this relentless violence is indicative of black-on-white racial hostility? Could it be that white people have way more reason to worry about black crime than black people do worry about white violence? That's a question you'll never get answered reading the AP Wire. But let's look anyway. Within the last few days, in Birmingham, Alabama, Tommy Shaw, a retired businessman who spent his spare time driving his RV around his state for Donald Trump, was in the home office when a black person came in and beat him to death. You got it. In Augusta, Georgia, a group of black people beat and robbed an 87-year-old grandmother. They left her with broken bones in her hands and face. Then they returned and set her on fire. She's still alive, if you want to call it that. They like to burn people up, don't they? In Staten Island, a white newcomer to the area met with an old-time black gangster. The white newcomer is dead, and a black man with a long record of violence is under arrest. In Amity Township, Pennsylvania, Michael Shields saw a black man trying to beat the owner of a motorcycle during a robbery. Shields came to help, and he was murdered. Now police are looking for another black-on-white killer. How many of these do you want? That's how many there are. Easy to find in my books and on YouTube. Black on white, black on gay, black on young, black on old, black on man, black on woman, black on Asian, black on Hispanic, black on recent immigrant, and on and on and on. Black mob violence, black mob car thievery from dealerships. Thousands of examples, easy to find, but when it comes to white-on-black crime, the Solons of AP have trouble ginning up anything except the racial fantasies of an amateur critical race theorist and some simple test. And did I mention the Black Lives Matter Matter leader who was just arrested for choking his pregnant girlfriend in Memphis? Or the black man who beat the white Trump supporter in New Jersey? Or the hundreds of black people who rampaged through downtown Pittsburgh? Or the many other examples of black violence that surpasses even ISIS for brutality and terror? Never mind, not in the AP style book.
To me, he ain't do no wrong, just shot a cop. To me, he ain't do no wrong, just shot a cop.
If all you knew about black mob violence and black-on-white crime is what you read in the newspapers or saw on TV, then you would believe that black people are relentless victims of relentless white racism all the time, everywhere. That explains everything, especially why black people are always being picked on by cops for no reason whatsoever. Hi, this is Colin Flaherty. I'm the author of Don't Make the Black Kids Angry, the best-selling book, and the author of this YouTube channel. Here we expose that as the greatest lie of our lifetimes, all without racism, without rancor, without apologies. I hope you'll stick around. I hope you'll subscribe to this channel, share the videos. We're going to start telling the truth. We're going to start exposing this lie. I'm proud to be in this with you. Thanks.
That's it for today, boys and girls. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Freya's Day, Ladies' Day in the Bunker, She-Wolf Day, 14-5.
Now, you wouldn't know it from some of the things I've said over the years, but I like people. I do. I like people, but I like them in short bursts. I don't like people for extended periods of time. I'm all right with them for a little while, but once you get up past around minute and a half, I gotta get the fuck out of there. And my reason is for one that you may share, possibly. I have a very low tolerance level for other people's stupid bullshit, okay? Stupid bullshit. Raising a child is not difficult. They try to make it into this mysterious, difficult task. Nothing to it. Easiest thing in the world to raise a kid, if you follow the steps. First step, you take the kid and you put him out on the street corner. And you leave him there. You come back a week later. If the kid is still there, you got yourself a stupid fucking kid.